Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.
Beer, mustard, honey, if that's not got your taste buds going, I don't know what will. Well, the sticky sausages aren't just for Debbie. They're for you too, because Asda's extra special chipolata sausages are just £1.75. You can get all these ingredients at Asda, as well as a full recipe at asda.com/James Martin.
Selected stores subject to availability. Chipolatas 375 grams.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. Whoa, dunk!
Get screen. Euro step. Basket.
Hey, puts it up. Let's go. Rebound Wade.
Let's go.
Hello and welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing phenomenal, man. I'm feeling really good tonight.
Feeling good? Just chillaxing?
Absolutely.
Kicking back?
Yeah.
Ready to talk some Enjoy. Basketball?
You got it. Always.
I'm still on that, I still have that Josh Richardson dunk looping through my mind. Have you seen the pictures of it that kind of have been floating around today?
Probably.
Kenneth Faried is just like on Hassan Whiteside's back. I didn't really notice it in like live action, but he's using Hassan Whiteside to get up like high enough and there's this one shot that has Richardson like at the peak of his jump and then Kenneth Faried like also on the peak of his like being on top of Hassan Whiteside, and it's kind of facing towards the fans, and you can just see all the fans are just got like their jaws are just open to be like what's about to happen, and it's just cool knowing that Richardson like actually dunks over Faried, because it doesn't look like he's going to do it when that picture is taken. It's a great picture. It reminds me of like those Sports Illustrated pictures that you like flip through in the front.
Yeah, absolutely. Like he's been putting up some highlight level dunks there, right? I mean, is he a contender for next year's dunk contest? Perhaps you think he has that kind of athleticism, or is that just he's more of an in game kind of dunker?
That's a good question. I thought about that last night. He's dunked over guys, but I don't know what he's actually done like. As like a style dunk, but it's really like it's interesting to know. Like, I don't know what he does like in his spare time. Like, you know, Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon are like they just dunk for fun. I don't know if Josh Richardson does that, but from everybody that talks about him, he's apparently super athletic and he's a gym rat and he's just like always working. So I imagine those times where he's just putting up jumpers, he's got to be dunking for fun at some point. I don't know.
Did you catch Jason Leiser's story from the Palm Beach Post?
No.
Oh, that one is worth checking out. So if you haven't seen it, it's definitely something for our listeners that didn't know this about Josh Richardson. Apparently, when he was, you know, trying to fight for some playing time earlier this season, and one of the things that he was really working on was his three-point shooting. Mm-hmm. He was at the gym, as he often was, putting up shots. And for him, he was trying to get to a point where he could hit 65 of 100 three-pointers.
I saw that note. I did see that. I heard, yeah. That's amazing.
He finally got to 65 of 100.
Wow.
But Spoelstra walked in there. This is after practice, mind you. Spoelstra walked there and said, no, it's not good enough. You got to hit 70. So he makes him go through the round of 100 again, and he's inching his way towards it. And in between sessions, he couldn't get to 70. He kept getting 66, then 67. And in between, every time, he was doing another round of hundreds. He would have to run sprints because Spoelstra, being the hard ass that he is, was making him run sprints in between. So by this point, he's trying to get pissed off. He's already been there for hours, it seems, and he's really getting fed up and frustrated. But Spoelstra keeps riding him and saying, what kind of a player do you want to be, et cetera. You know, a lot of coach speak, but really getting through to Richardson, and he responds to it, and he sticks with it. And finally, after running through the session a number of times, he finally hits 70 of 100, and that's, I mean, you're seeing the results now where he's hitting at such a high rate, and it's unbelievable to think that Spoelstra, you know, you don't really ever imagine Spoelstra being that kind of hands-on guy. Mm-hmm. Now that he's a head coach, you know, he had that relationship with Wade once upon a time, but nowadays you don't picture it. But he's really applying himself. He's really pushing this rookie, And it's paying dividends for the team and for Richardson himself, who's been phenomenal over the last few games.
We wanted to talk about Richardson on the podcast last week, and we just kind of didn't. We kind of just forgot, I guess, ran out of time.
Sure.
But it's almost good because he's just kept being good. He keeps getting better. You know, he scored 22 points the other night. He had that great dunk. Yeah, he's going to have two Sports Center dunks in 2 weeks. But it's the other things, too. I mean, as great as that dunk was, the most impressive play to me last night was when he was defending Emmanuel Mudiay and I think
the steal, right?
Yeah, that steal. He was defending two guys in a screen and roll. Somebody as fast as Mudiay, right? And somebody as big as Nurkic, the center that I think it was Nurkic setting the screen.
Yeah.
And he just defended both of them. He set a wall between both of them, and then Mudiay tried to pass the ball, and he just stole it. I mean, it was just, like, how many players in the NBA honestly make that play?
I mean, the top perimeter defenders, guys like, you know, Kawhi,
there's no Paul more, George, no more right? than no more than 12 guys in the league make that play.
Probably not. I mean, he's look, we talked about it in context of Winslow before, and it's amazing that they have not one but two rookies who do these things so well, the little things, and particularly on the defensive end. You know, that's something that a lot of players don't ever master, no matter how long they've been in the league. And for guys that are this young, this capable, I know that Richardson's a four-year player, so that's, you know, typically the kind of player that Riley likes to draft. But Winslow isn't. He only played that 1 year. He's still, what, is he 19 still or 20? I don't even know at this point. Is he still 19? I mean, that's unbelievable.
I think his birthday is near mine. I think I remember in April. You can keep talking.
No, about this. Okay. It's okay. I think, you know, it's incredible to consider that these guys are willing to do these things that it comes for them on defense first. And then, particularly in the case of Richardson, it's really starting to show on the other end as well. His athleticism is one thing, but he's shooting well from mid range. He's shooting phenomenally well from long range. And he's just an active, I mean, he's bringing the ball up. He's an active player all the way around. It's really impressive to see these guys develop over the course of the season. And I know that you and I talked about this before we started talking, you know, about how Miami typically is viewed as a team that really doesn't concentrate or worry too much about the draft. You know, you pointed out on another podcast how, you know, Riley's traded away draft picks for Goran Dragic, so you get that impression that he doesn't really care about building through the draft. But yet here they have Winslow, they've got Richardson, they've got Whiteside, they've got Tyler Johnson, who's on the books for another year. An impressive young core moving forward.
Absolutely. Justice Winslow, March 26th. He'll turn 20. So coming up, we got to get him a birthday present.
A win streak would be nice.
What?
A win streak would be nice, I think.
Yeah, that's all he cares about is the wins. With Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow. I want to talk about Whiteside, Winslow, and Richardson a little bit later, and just particularly that trio together. But they use the D-League to kind of mine Whiteside and Tyler Johnson out of nowhere when they just really needed players last season, right?
Right.
And they're able to come to the draft, and they just – the Heat are so great at just waiting for opportunities to present themselves and taking advantage of it. And so often people say that things just fall in their lap, and I don't think that's giving them enough credit. Do they value the draft? Not really. Like, they traded two first rounders for Goran Dragic, who was set to be a free agent, but they at least saw value in that because Dragic was unhappy and he wanted to leave Phoenix, and he had a short list, but it was still a list. There was no guarantee that he wasn't going to sign with New York or LA. Like, he might have signed with those teams. They guaranteed themselves an opportunity to have Goran Dragic by trading those two future first-rounders, because maybe there is a sense that they don't value those picks, so they feel like those picks aren't going to be worth as much in the future, especially if they got Goran Dragic. They're assuming that they're not going to be picking in the lottery for those 2 years.
Right.
But they're trading away second-round picks willy-nilly just to clear cap space. So there is, like, they clearly don't value draft picks the same way most other NBA teams value draft picks, but they've invested a lot in that D-League system, the Sioux Falls Skyforce. They have a one-on-one ownership of them. They control the team. They use the team often to bring players up and down. and they have their some key assistants coaching that team for the last 2 years. Right. I mean, their coaches have gotten great assistant gigs out of. I don't think they've had a coach in Sioux Falls for more than 2 years before they've gotten an NBA assistant coaching job. I think it's they're using other resources and they're doing a good job of it. Of course, when the Justice Winslow falls to their lap, we're happy about that. But then they also go ahead and get Josh Richardson. They don't really draft busts so much. I mean, even Norris Cole was like a contributor there for a couple of years before he kind of just fell off the face of the planet.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the two picks that they traded for Dragic, I mean, obviously, Dragic, if you consider him being the equal of a first-round draft pick, you definitely got a steal there if you can get a player as productive as he's been, mm-hmm. especially if he maintains that level of productivity over the course of his contract. But for the cost of one other draft pick, you arguably were able to acquire a player like Whiteside, who's certainly worth that, and a guy like Tyler Johnson, who's maybe more of a second-round level player, but still a quality, you know, a productive player.
Yeah, late first, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is where Miami would be expected to draft anyway. Mm-hmm. Richardson certainly seems to be at that level. Winslow, I mean, yeah, he dropped a 10th, but he was projected to go a lot higher, and he's been very productive. I mean, in context of this year's draft class, it's so hard to tell exactly where a guy like Winslow would fall because you have such elite level talent and you know Karl-Anthony Towns and Kristaps Porzingis, etc., and other guys that are really contributing at a high level. But
yeah, I mean, you go Miami. Back to like the Victor Oladipo draft or the Anthony Bennett draft, and you make a case that Justice Winslow would have been the top pick in the draft those years.
Clearly. I mean, he's already been more productive this season than Anthony Bennett was over the 3 years that he's been in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already on his way out, I think. He's already on with his third team, if I'm not mistaken, and he's no longer in the league at this point.
And Justice Winslow's coming off of a 20-point performance. And Richardson has been – he's scored over, I think, double-digit points in, like, the last
– Well, he had a 14-point outing against Milwaukee. It was a loss, but still. A 22-point outing when he was huge from downtown, 4 of 6 from three-point range. And he went for just 8 points against Toronto,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that Wade didn't play in that game. So that's a little surprising. He still played 26 minutes, but he only got 8 points. He still finished 3 of 7, so he shot at a high percentage.
Yeah.
And then he had 17 points against Denver.
So they have this 3-and-D guy now. Kind of what Tyler Johnson was before he got hurt. He was like this 3-and-D guy. So they have last year, you know, as weird of a season it was, their biggest problem was perimeter defense. And they address that in the draft with two young, eager defenders. It's amazing how good defensively they are. I mean, as wing defenders, are they the two best wing defenders to come out of this draft? Like, Karl-Anthony Towns is terrific all over the floor, but.
Yeah. You mean you've got some incredible bigs there. You know, you've got, I'm drawing a blank here, but I mean, aside from Porzingis and Towns, you've got, I guess Turner in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. But for like perimeter guys, though.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You've got all these bigs that were drafted that are, you know, that's what makes this draft so impressive is that they're these versatile, multifaceted bigs. But as far as, you know, perimeter players, I think they're probably the two best. I'm sure you could probably go into it a little bit more and consider others. But yeah, they're among them. I mean, even drafted ahead of Winslow, who? Mario Hezonja? He's not really much of a defender.
Right. Yeah, he's not a good defender right now.
Right.
Oops, at least the few games that I've watched, he's not very good. You have two really good picks. The Heat are going to the playoffs, and they're going to have two rookies in their top eight. That's pretty impressive for a team that, quote-unquote, doesn't value the draft. So it's just interesting how they take advantage of the opportunities. Yes, they don't really they are more willing to trade away draft picks, but when they have the draft picks, they do tend to make the most out of them, right? Two of their last three lottery picks were Justice Winslow and Dwayne Wade, right? I mean, you have Michael Beasley in there too, but still, we got robbed out of Derrick Rose.
I mean, Beasley's still been you know, enigmatic and somewhat productive player. I mean, yeah, it's typical. I mean, for all the crap, I think somebody's pointed this out recently with his comeback into the league now, but he's wound up playing many more games than Derrick Rose has over the course of his career, despite the fact that he's been over series. I think he has. Yeah, I think he has played a substantially larger amount.
Wow. Well, either way, I mean, it's really incredible how these guys are doing it, and then just in general, the bench mob. As was Justice Winslow said that after the game, we call them ourselves the bench mob. Whiteside, Josh Richardson, and Winslow, they've captured something here. I've really enjoyed, just in general, the pairings that Eric Spoelstra's kind of come up with over the course of the season. It kind of started with Wade and Whiteside.
Mm-hmm.
And he's almost like, you know, he hasn't latched onto that. He's been willing to mix different pairings up. You know, we have the Luol Deng, Goran Dragic pairing. A lot of different kind of good little 2- and 3-man lineups. And we've stumbled onto a new one lately with Whiteside, Winslow, and Richardson. And since the All-Star break, and this is from NBA.com, Richardson, Whiteside, and Winslow have logged the second most amount of minutes out of any trio on the Heat. And they have a net rating of 8.3. Their offensive rating is comparable to that of the lineup that has Goran Dragic, Hassan Whiteside, and Justice Winslow. Right? So you're just swapping Dragic and Richardson. The defensive rating is very good. I mean, this is... But to me, the most impressive stat is the 201 minutes that they've logged together since the All-Star break. The only... I mean, that's incredible for a 3-man lineup. The three guys that are coming off the bench, the only two ahead of it is Luol Deng, Goran Dragic, and Winslow, and Luol Deng, Goran Dragic, and Whiteside. So two starters and a bench player. A heavy minute bench player.
Right.
Eric Spoelstra clearly is relying on that group.
Yeah, and as well he should. I mean, they've been, you know, it's just incredible that, you know, you'd think that with the loss of Chris Bosh, the team would kind of spiral a little bit, but it's wound up being inadvertently creating a whole heck of a lot of depth on this team. Yeah, the addition of Joe Johnson certainly helps, but by virtue of having to rearrange his lineup and, you know, putting Luol Deng at the four, et cetera, you know, you've got all of a sudden these rookies and Whiteside coming off the bench and being incredibly productive and not just putting up numbers, but putting up numbers in quality games that lead towards wins. That's the biggest thing, I think. You know, because you can look at other players, other rookies, you know, they're putting up big numbers and not contributing towards wins. That's not the case. They're defending well. They're putting up impressive scoring numbers. And like you said, they've fallen into the system that Spoelstra has in place, and it's working out. And as part of a playoff race to boot, you know, they're keeping Miami in that contention in the standings for the third spot in the Eastern Conference. It's just, you run out of superlatives there because they've just been so impressive. And you don't expect that to be the case when you're dealing with players this young, but, you know, they've just been so good.
I was completely joking when I tweeted this, but the point was, last night I tweeted, who's the better big three? Wade, Dragic, and Bosh, or Winslow, Richardson, and Whiteside? And obviously that's a joke, but there's a point here where there is a big three kind of bubbling underneath the surface here, right? Where you can kind of clearly see what the future of this Heat team is. If they're able to keep these pieces together. Let's say they re-sign Whiteside this offseason, which to me is looking more and more like a reality, like a stronger possibility than what we would have said before the All-Star break after he tried to knock Boban Marjanovic's, whatever his name is, chin into the fourth row.
Okay, now why do you say that? I got to stop you here. I know you're going to go on to another, you know, deeper point here, but why do you think Whiteside is more likely to re-sign with the team at this point?
Well, I think that the consistent message around the team from the players has been that something clearly clicked during that All-Star break.
Okay.
And I know a lot of it is, okay, we've heard this with Whiteside a few times this last season and a half-ish kind of thing. But it really seems to hold true, and I know you and I have talked about in the past, on past podcasts, the idea of Whiteside coming off the bench and how would he mentally handle that. And it seems like he's taking it in stride right now. I don't know if he thinks it's not a permanent thing. I know I read one quote where he said that Spoelstra said it wasn't permanent, but that was right when it first started. Has he kind of sat into that role, realizing he's still playing nearly 40 minutes a game or whatever it is, 35 minutes a game. He's still getting all the stats that he could ever want. I don't know. I think that if the Heat are going, if the Heat miss out on Kevin Durant, which is probably going to happen, and now it's between Al Horford and Whiteside, and just let's assume Horford's shopping himself around. I thought, like, 2 months ago, the obvious answer was go for Al Horford. It just makes more sense. But in this new system with Bosch and Whiteside coming off the bench and Bosch probably playing center when he comes back, I go with Whiteside just because he's younger. He's got more upside at this point. I think that comes into play. And if they make him that offer, I just think Whiteside stays. I just don't know what other option is going to be better for him. I don't know. I'm not saying it's 100% going to happen. I'm just saying it's more likely to happen than where we were pre-All-Star break.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'd probably say, like, pre-All-Star break, I would have said 15% he comes back. And now I'm over 50% now.
Yeah, that's a sizable jump there. Impressive.
Well, it's a completely different game that they're playing. And I love Whiteside coming off the bench. Like, I keep saying, before, when he's in the starting lineup, you have to rely on him to play well and to play within the system for the team to play well and for the team to win. But coming off the bench, he's just a spark off the bench. He's just gravy at this point. If he plays great, that's amazing. But he's not, like, necessary for that central function of the team to work. So, all that said, do you disagree with any of that, or are you asking a question?
No, I mean, I don't know. I really don't think... I think it's hard to tell with him. And, you know, we're making rash judgments on a player that you neither of us have had, like, personal conversations with.
I feel like I know him from Snapchat, though.
Yeah. I mean, that does provide a very clear window into his personality. But it's hard to say for certain, you know. People tend to want to make judgments about a guy like Whiteside, and he certainly opens himself up to that type of criticism because of, you know, his outgoing personality and his emotive behavior on the court, which both of us have talked about in other podcasts, that it's not necessarily the best look for him, that you kind of want... You know, you kind of want him to be more in the moment and be more focused on the game rather than, you know, letting those emotions get the better of him and taking him away from being the kind of impactful player that he's been. So it's hard to predict exactly what he's going to do. Now, I think anybody would be able to say that he's clearly comfortable here. You know, he knows the players, he knows the system, he's getting better. He's getting more effective than he was even, you know, last year when he was catching the league by storm and completely by surprise. So you would have to say that this is probably a better option for him, but it's hard to imagine any player possibly giving up the opportunity to make more money, especially at this point in their career, considering the fact that he didn't make much money when he was first drafted, that he made even less of it when he was playing overseas, that he wasn't making any of it at all when he was waiting for teams to call him a little over a year ago. He's been playing on such a relatively inexpensive contract in the 2 years that he's been with Miami. Clearly the best bargain in the league, considering his gaudy numbers. So you'd have to think that he'd want to be able to make more, but it's hard to predict with a guy like Whiteside or anybody whether or not the cost of a few million extra dollars are worth more of the peace of mind that he might be able to maintain if he stays in Miami. It's hard to say. You know, 20 million.
It's hard because you're right. We don't know him, right? So, right. I mean, the other side of that coin could be he spent time playing in Lebanon, out of the league, just trying to fight his way back in the league. He's finally found somewhere where he's succeeding after bouncing around to a couple different teams that didn't even give him a chance, really, or where he didn't have success. He might say, like, it's not worth those $3 million to just flame out somewhere else or not be utilized the right way somewhere else. I want to stay right here because I like my job security. We don't know him. We don't know where his mindset is. I don't picture him as somebody as... that's going to really think like in that way. I picture him as more as somebody like, no, $4 million is $4 million. Like I'm going to take $4 million more somewhere.
Right. It's not hard to imagine him saying, oh, I'm going to be able to cash in wherever I can. Yeah.
But we also don't know. I mean, I feel like people that play overseas, especially for the amount of time he played, it's just hard to get really into their minds to get what their perspective is. I don't know.
Sure. No, I mean, and he talked about it a number of times, especially when his story was first making headlines. I mean, the kind of things that he saw were, I think he saw like a car bomb go off like mere feet in front of him as he was playing overseas. And I mean, he's seen people die in the streets and things like this. It's like, I mean, those are life altering moments there where ultimately money does not mean anything.
Right. So you just, but, it's hard to know where he's coming from.
Sure.
I think in the general point, or my general point was, if you look at this free agency, Kevin Durant, let's just take him off the table because the answer is obvious if he's available, right? So let's just take him off the table. Al Horford, the Hawks didn't trade him. It seems more likely that he stays in Atlanta, that they try to, like, they clearly want to try to keep this group together in some capacity. If he does leave, I mean, I know Orlando's been rumored heavily. There's a lot of teams that could use Al Horford. It just seems less likely. So if it's between, like, I don't know, Nick Batum probably stays in Charlotte. Like, that's what I keep hearing, is that, you know, he likes it there. He stays there. Because they probably going to overpay for him.
But I think they're ready to move on from Al Jefferson. And being that he's from North Carolina, Whiteside's a good fit there.
Yeah, I just don't know after they – I don't know Charlotte's cap Kaminsky situation all that well. But if they max out Batum, I don't know.
And they do have Kaminsky there. So, I mean, he might that's be the center thing of the future, yeah.
Right. And they want to play, like, this five-out system that has Kemba Walker driving and kicking. Like, there's something working there. I don't know that they want to mess that up by just bringing in Al Jefferson 2.0.
Sure.
I don't know. I just, like, if it's between nothing and Hassan – or not nothing, but signing Hassan Whiteside now to, like, a max-ish offer sheet or waiting for 2017 – I think that's becoming an option.
I think you and a lot of Heat fans are certainly closer to that reality at this point. I think, you know, maybe a few months ago, without him being as effective as he's been and not necessarily being playing the role of the dutiful soldier as well as he has been since the All-Star break, since that one game suspension, it's hard to look at that as any kind of a wake-up moment, any singular wake-up moment where all of a sudden he's going to have a complete turnaround as far as his perspective or anything like that. But he does seem to be playing much more in control and more effectively. And so, yeah, I mean, I think clearly he's a good fit here at this point. I think fans want to embrace him a lot more. I think they've always appreciated the blocks and the flexing and the dunks. I mean, those things are always going to get fans excited. But he's also doing little things, and he's, you know, he's even shooting well from the three-throw line. And so, but, you know, there was a great piece in Vice Sports by Jared Dubin about Whiteside recently. I don't know if you had a chance to read it. But he brings up similar points that, you know, considering as good as he's been and the numbers he's putting up, you would think a lot more people would be talking about him. But there's still that kind of hesitancy based on his personality and whether or not he could fit in. And he's not necessarily, you know, you talk about – you know, Kevin Durant clearly would be the top free agent in this summer. But, you know, a guy like Whiteside, given his age, given his numbers, he should be right up there. And I think there's still that kind of you're weighing the production that he's put up over the last year and a half versus the rumored personality issues, and you don't know where he might stand. So it's
that
like
that could help the Heat, you know, drive that price down. I think when you and I talked about it on the last podcast, we – you know, there's this idea that there's a max contract floating out there somewhere for Whiteside that somebody's going to pay him, right? Like, that's the line that we keep getting served. Somebody's going to pay him. I'm just wondering who it is that's paying him at this point. And anyway, in general, that trio, that Whiteside-Winslow-Richardson trio, or if you want to just talk about Rook 1 and Rook 2 by themselves, there's clearly, like, a future of the franchise, which is so – it's an amazing turnaround from where the Heat were when LeBron walked out the door.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, you have that first layer, which is that they brought in Goran Dragic, and you have this clear big three now with Dragic, Wade, and Bosch. However that's going to work in the future, however long that's going to be a thing, that's the clear trio in charge. And then there's this other one, this bench mob of Whiteside, Richardson, and Winslow, which seems like that's it's pointed towards the future for the Heat. And then you kind of have this link, Dragic, who's younger than Bosch and Wade, that can kind of maybe bridge that gap. And I just think that this Heat team is really interesting. I think they're poised to be in a good direction. I just wanted to get your opinion on the core. like that core 7-8 that includes Tyler Johnson, Joe Johnson coming back, because he says he wants to finish his career in Miami. So let's just assume for the argument's sake that that happens.
Good point.
Luol Deng, who seems worthy of re-signing at this point. I mean, I don't know what stretch four that the Heat are going to be able to sign better than Luol Deng.
Right.
This is a nice little thing that they've finally kind of cobbled together.
Absolutely. And if you look at how we perceive this team, how many people perceive this team in the offseason, the criticism was, oh, they've got a nice starting five and not much else after that. Yeah. It's been kind of the opposite. I mean, and something you, again, would not have necessarily noticed if Chris Bosh doesn't go down, and again, before the addition of Joe Johnson, but all of a sudden, you've got a very deep team here, quality players, and you're right, there's a good future there where you could imagine Wade retiring in a couple seasons and kind of Richardson taking over that two slot for him if Dragic is still there playing out the end of his contract. There's a lot of nice things moving forward. Justice Winslow kind of taking over the small forward position. The team is – there's a bigger picture there that we didn't necessarily see earlier this year that's shaping up, and it looks like a positive one for Miami.
And now the idea comes in, like, who do you want to hold on to? Who are your complimentary pieces going to be? Are you going to re-sign Deng? Are you going to re-sign Whiteside? Like, these are still questions, right? But
yeah. Stoudemire.
I mean, at this point, I'm bringing Stoudemire back.
Sure.
Like, I don't want to fall into a point where you give him a two-year, $10 million contract.
He's made enough, I think. I don't think you want to throw a lot of money his way.
Yeah, but we gave a lot of money to Chris Anderson. But,
yeah.
And that contract looked bad.
But that's also kind of a post-championship malaise there. It was also important to re-sign him and not let him go to Cleveland. Remember, there was that whole – that LeBron was wooing him to go to Cleveland. And, I mean, now looking back, it's like, yeah, they should have taken him. Although I miss his personality and seeing him there, it was, contractually speaking, not a good choice for Miami to bring him at that amount of money. And one more point about Whiteside. Clearly there's a relationship there with Spoelstra that's been strengthened over the course of the season. So, you know, you take the Richardson account into, you know, context there as well. And clearly Spoelstra is really working with these players there. And it's something you kind of take for granted, in that one of the criticisms for him was that he was there during the first 2 years of his head coaching career, and he was kind of riding the coattails, I guess you could say, for MVP level Dwayne Wade at the peak of his powers. Then there was the big three era where it's kind of like, oh, he's just managing minutes. But now you're starting to see this different side of him. And he's still going to have his fair share of critics. The Fire Spo crowd is still as vocal as ever, even if they don't know what the hell they're talking about. But, they have to admit that he's working with these players, that he's got an individual relationship with them that is maximizing their ability there. And he's finding ways to insert these players, get the most out of their abilities, and kind of keep things moving along, even when you lose a player like, you know, Chris Bosh. I mean, look at any other team. Look at Cleveland. If they lost Kevin Love for a prolonged period of time, how effective would they be? They've already got issues galore, and they still are able to rely on a player of his ability. So, I mean, you lose a player like Chris Bosh, who provides so much offensively and defensively, and then you're still able to continue winning, maybe even at a higher level than you did before the loss of Bosh. That's just, I mean, you have to admit that Spoelstra's doing a heck of a job here.
Even with Amari Stoudemire, I mean, his defensive statistics, I mean, the eye test says he's doing a great job on defense. His statistics are good.
Right.
And Stoudemire was written off as a defender like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And he is, like, playing really well at center for the Heat. I mean, nobody thought, and this is a guy that didn't, like, just a bunch of coaches' decisions, DNPs to start the season, really.
Absolutely.
And now he's playing, like, a vital role for the Heat. He's not holding down minutes until Whiteside comes off the bench. Like, there's a reason he's starting. And that's the other thing with Spoelstra and this coaching staff, to give credit to the whole staff, they are continually getting the most out of young guys and veterans, and especially on the defensive end, where they're really able to just get guys to turn that extra gear defensively. I mean, as much as Gerald Green's been a disaster lately, he at least has not been the disaster on defense that he once was. I think he's still a negative overall, but he's not nearly as bad as he was. And he even kicked – he had a gear there for a little while at the beginning of the year where he's a good one-on-one defender. I just – it's amazing. And I think you're right. Like, this whole Fire Spo crowd, people have got to give him credit. And I like when the smart guys, the Hubie Browns and the Doris Burks and all those guys, when they're asked who your top five coaches, all of them will have Spo in their top five.
Absolutely.
So I want to get to talking about the Heat and the Celtics and that battle for the third seed. But do you want to take a early mailbag really quick?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we did get some good questions.
Yeah, we got some good questions. First one is from Nikias NBA, at Nikias NBA on Twitter.
Who is a phenomenal writer for today's Fast Break, by the way.
Yeah, he does a really great job. I really like what he's doing over there.
And I believe it's Nikias, but I might be wrong.
You're probably right, because I wasn't exactly sure how to say it. Sorry, Nikias. You know, hit me up on Twitter. Tell me how to say your name. Should Miami swing for the fences this summer or bring back the band and wait until next year? We kind of already talked about this, but I guess this is really putting us on the spot for an answer.
It's hard to say because, you know, so much has to break exactly right for them to, you know, to duplicate the kind of success they've had. And I think there's a tendency there for everybody to want to keep a core intact and say, oh, this is a great group. You like seeing the camaraderie, the positive vibes you're getting from them, so you kind of want them to stick around. But even, you know, Golden State, as good as they have been, are meeting with their fair share of detractors who are saying, why would you possibly break up a team that could set an all-time record and possibly risk that by going after Kevin Durant? And the answer is, well, he's Kevin Durant. I mean, he's a trend, you know, he's an incredible player, you know, a generational type player. From long range, he's an incredible scorer, a plus defender. I mean, he's a great playmaker. He does so many things very well, and that's, you know, largely ignored because of the way they play in Oklahoma City and the lack of, you know, championship success or whatever, but he's still a great player. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm really, if I had to say right now, based on the core that we're talking about, I would say keep the core intact.
Yeah. I like this question because should Miami swing for the fences? Like, we know Riley is probably going to swing for the fences, right? We know he's going to get that meeting with Durant. But should they? If Durant is an option, you've got to try to get Durant. And that, to me, is what swing for the fences is. I don't know if Al Horford right now, at this point in his career, is swing for the fences.
No, and you'd have to, you know, you're going to owe Chris Bosh a certain amount of money.
Right.
Unless he retires, and even as we talked about last time, apparently there's still a hold in the salary cap. So, you know, he's going to be being paid somewhat next year, even if there's a smaller amount or whatever. So,
and then
you're limited what you can do, right?
You're a little limited. I think the idea between Bosch and Horford would be to play them together, and you give up on Whiteside, and you almost have like this Duncan Aldridge Spurs type thing, where you just have like two triple threat guys on the elbow, which would be really interesting. And it's kind of what the Heat tried to do originally with Josh McRoberts, right? You try to have two guys, triple threat guys on the elbows. You can run any play to either side, and you can have them both facilitate and initiate offense, which was a really interesting idea in theory, and then McRoberts, you know, fell off a cliff or whatever. But, you know, other than Durant, I'm not sure what swinging for the fences is really considered. Is Chandler Parsons, like, he's having a really good year, but is he swinging for the fences? I don't know. Like, it would be interesting to put Parsons as another ball handler on the wing in maybe Luol Deng's place.
It's a stretch four.
Yeah. He's a good pick and roll guy. Like he could do some fun stuff that Luol Deng can't really do. But I don't know if that's swinging for the fences. So if I'm the Heat, I like where we talked about it before. I like where this core is. I think you got a major big three in place. You got another big three waiting, but contributing in a major way. Right. I like where this team's headed. Obviously, if you can get Durant, you get him. You gotta get a meeting with him, but.
Which he'll do, and we've all acknowledged this. But it's also, you know, then you have to figure out the nuances of what makes Riley so effective is having ultimate control of how he frames his sales pitch.
Yeah.
And that's so nebulous when you have so many different questions, like do you ignore Dwayne Wade or the fact that he's going to be demanding the ball as a starter?
Yeah.
Do you have some assurance that Bosch is going to be 100% healthy next season? Do you have some assurance that Whiteside is going to be taking a substantially less amount of money? You know, there's so much there to consider before you sit down with Kevin Durant, what's the pitch? You know, how do you frame the future of this team moving forward so that he's not wasting any time? Right now, as many people have alluded to, if Durant's going to sign anywhere, it's where he can win a ring right away. He has to. I mean, the pressure on him to win is almost as great as it was for LeBron in 2010.
Right, and I don't see – I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that, because if Durant leaves, I think Riley gets the meeting, but that might be about it. I mean, if it's between – it's got to be between the Thunder and the Warriors. I just don't see another team that – like the Heat at this point, I just – why would Durant come to Miami to play with Wade and Bosch, whose health is very uncertain, and then the future of Josh Richardson and Winslow? I mean, we love that future, but – it's not better than what the Warriors or the Thunder can offer. So anyway, yeah, I think we want to just keep this thing together and just build around it, build with it, let these players grow, and just have, like, just keep this train rolling and then just add and just pick up players on the way. I just think that's the way to go right now, because it's unfortunate that the Warriors are so good right now. I know Riley wants to win another championship soon. The Warriors are really freaking good right now, and I know you can't really, like, make your organizational decisions on the fact that we're probably not going to win an NBA NBA championship for 3 or 4 years until this thing breaks up in Golden State. But, you can't lose those future pieces.
Right.
Anyway, so next question from Adrian Wilkins, Adrian W743 on Twitter. How much does Hassan, Wade, and Joe Johnson come back for this summer, assuming salary wise? Well, of those three, Whiteside is going to get a max-ish. The idea was that Wade kind of had his last big bang contract, right, with this $20 million deal that he signed for 1 year.
Well, that's the assumption now.
That's the assumption now.
Last summer, it was he's going to cash in last summer, which he did, and he's going to cash in again in upcoming summers. You know, he's already said he wants to play a few more years, and he's proven – if he's using this year as kind of a proving ground to say, look, I can play a majority of the season. I clearly can still play at an all-star and high level. I mean, there's no reason why he couldn't command the same amount of money next year if he wants to throw a monkey wrench into all of Riley's plans.
I wouldn't throw it at – you have to consider it, right?
Right. It's a possibility. It's impossible to gauge whether or not he's going to say, nah, you know, he's already said he wants to finish his career in Miami, and he doesn't want to go through the same kind of drama that he did last season, even though it wound up being somewhat anticlimactic in that regard. Having said that, he might say, look, give me 2 years at $10 million per, and I'll be happy. That's a nice way to wrap up. Right. It's been a great career here, and I don't want to mess up your plans too much. But I still want to get paid somewhat because there is some ego involved, and that's clearly the process here.
And I think that's a fair amount to pay Dwayne Wade right now.
Two for 20,
yeah. I think – and that would have been my guess. Between 2 for 20 and 2 for 24. That's my guess. Whiteside making $18 to $22 million a year, depending on how much the Heat can – probably closer to that $22 million mark.
Really?
And then I do. I think if he resigns, that's what it's going to take. And then Joe Johnson, I don't know. I don't, like, mid-level exception-ish money? Like
$5 million per?
$5, $6 million a year, yeah.
Yeah. 3 years, 2 years? You think he'll want a multi-year deal?
I think they can get him a three-year, because Joe Johnson said things like he wants to finish his career in Miami. Like, he doesn't want to be bouncing around the league anymore. He just wants to be somewhere where he can contend, but get playing time and play.
Yeah.
I think you could sell him on like a 3, maybe even a 4-year deal, right?
Oh, do you want him for another 4 years then?
No, but at 35? If you can take that salary down by like $2 million a year, I think you just sign him to 4 years. I think that's just the economics of it, and you just deal with it in year four. But yeah, I would guess like 3 years at $5-ish million a year.
So 3 for 15.
Yeah.
2 for 20 for Wade, and then maybe 5 for 100?
Something
for
like
Whiteside.
That.
For Whiteside?
Yeah. 5 for 100, 110.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question. I like that question. We can play economics now.
No, we need to get Adrian, what's his name, Andy Ellsberg, to come out here and answer the question for us.
Yeah, because he's so in the public about things. all right, Harrison Citrin, L or I don't know. Just find them on Twitter. Thanks for asking the question. Do you bring the band back minus JL Green and Udonis Haslam?
No, I think he was answering Nikias's question, and his response was, bring the band back, minus Green and UD.
We're going to take this as a question because you added us, brother. Obviously, minus Green, right? Like, this, that ship sailed. But you don't get rid of Udonis Haslem.
Well, he's a free agent, right? I mean, his contract expires. Him.
He retires or you re-sign him?
Well, that's a question, right? Does he want to continue playing?
Right. So either he retires, and if he wants to keep playing, you re-sign him. Absolutely. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not watching Haslem play anywhere else. Either he retires or we re-sign him.
Yeah, that would be scary, right? I mean, that's not quite, you know, Jordan in a Wizards jersey or anything like that, but that's, I mean, that would be kind of weird seeing UD elsewhere.
Exactly. And I don't know. He's a Heat lifer.
Well, yeah.
The term was created for Udonis Haslem. I mean, not really. It was created for LeBron James, but
I thought it was created for Wade.
It was kind of created for Wade, wasn't it?
I think it was created by Wade.
Well, good for Wade.
Didn't he? I thought that was the whole thing. When he chose to come back in that tumultuous summer of 2014, he responded back, Heat Life. Hashtag Heat Lifer.
Well, I thought Riley said it at a press conference. I don't know.
I don't think so.
We don't fact check this thing. you're usually right about these things. I tend to make things up. Signed two shooters, Bino and a big. I like it. He says swing for the fences. I don't know that's swing for the fences.
Oh, in 2017. Yeah.
So that's the problem, right? Is if you bring back Whiteside, I don't know that you can swing for the fences in 2017.
Right? Can you if you know the talk is Durant signs a 1-1, right?
Yeah.
Or can you do the same thing with Whiteside?
I think his agent would see right through that.
Well, I mean, given his age, and I mean, maybe if you sign him for $20 million this year, and then, you know, an option for a second year, and then he can, you know, choose maybe when the cap goes up in 2017, he can capitalize on that even more. I mean, you know, there's an option there, right? It's hard to say exactly what Whiteside's agent is thinking, whether or not he'd rather take the stability of like what we just theorized, a 5 for 110, or if he'd want a 1-1 where he could maybe capitalize on next year in the summer of 2017 for even more money or the long term.
Yeah, maybe I'm old school, but if you're a big man, I don't think you ever take that one-on-one, the 1-1 deal. I think the injury is just too much of a risk.
Considering the fact that lineups are smaller, it's not like he's banging up against, you know, Shaquille O'Neal or Hakeem Olajuwon or Patrick Ewing or anything like that. I mean, and even those guys play for a hell of a long time.
Yeah, but he went down without touching anybody for like 3 games with an oblique injury.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'd be like, I'm not his agent and I'm not Hassan Whiteside, but if I'm a big man, I get long-term deals. Never, I'm not gambling things for 2017.
It's even riskier. It's even riskier for Durant, and everybody assumes it's a foregone conclusion. And he's got a history of,
that's,
you know,
true. That's
he's got a potentially career-ending injury last summer. You know, where he had 3 foot surgeries on the same foot. I mean, there's the fact that he's playing at the MVP type level that he is this year is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people expect him to say, no, I want a 1-year deal, gambling on the future of his health.
That's a good point. So I think we answered all the questions. Basically, we're bringing back Whiteside and Haslem.
No, there was an additional question there.
Was it?
By Adam underscore Barai,
who asks,
and this is a question directed towards you, I think. How much do the Heat look like the Clippers as both teams are missing their starting power forwards and yet both are thriving?
I'm glad you caught that one. I totally skipped over it by accident. Thanks, Adam. Why do you think this is directed towards me?
Well, yeah, I think you've seen I think we've talked about this before, haven't you? And I think the Clippers, I think, fall more into your West Coast purview. I think you've seen them a little bit more than I have, I'm sure.
Honestly, I really haven't thought about the Heat and the Clippers related in that way, that they're both, like, missing their star power forwards.
Right.
How much do the Heat look like the Clippers?
Because you've got the DeAndre Jordan-Whiteside comparison, although I think at this point Whiteside is more versatile than Jordan by a long shot.
Yeah, I don't.
There are similarities.
Chris Paul, Goran Dragic leading the offense. I guess I don't know.
I mean, Redick is, you know, a catch and shoot guy who spreads the floor and constantly running around screens. I mean,
to me, like that, the foundation that the Clippers are built on is so shaky. They just don't look like the Heat to me. Like, they just got, like, this kind of weird group of, like, Wesley Johnson starting at small forward. Like, they got some weird stuff going on. Like, they kind of, they got on that Paul Pierce bandwagon, like, 3 years too late, 2 years too late. I don't know. I just,
and yet they're fourth in the
like,
West.
Nominally, they kind of look like them. Like, if you look at the two teams on paper, like, yeah, Paul Pierce and Luol Deng, like, veterans who went against LeBron in the playoffs. DeAndre Jordan Whiteside, pick and roll finishers, shot blocking centers. But really, they don't really look alike to me. Not at all.
Yeah, I think they're structurally different. They're stylistically different. Yeah. They're not as defensive a team. You know, DeAndre's rim protection is one thing, but I think the rest of them would probably be minus defenders. I'm not sure if Chris Paul is a plus defender at this point. Reddick clearly isn't, although he's probably playing better than he has in a long time. But I don't know.
They're just like functionally different, right? Like the Clippers are still like, yeah, what, the fourth seed in the West.
Yeah, 42-23 at this point. So yeah, they've won more than Miami has, yeah, even out West, which
like they're fun. You know, I just think different this year than it has been in the past. They're just different. I don't know. So yeah, those were all the questions.
But a team that we do. Yeah, I'm sorry. Let's go back and thank all of our incredible listeners and all of our wonderful followers on Twitter for putting questions forth, and hopefully we'll continue to do this in the next podcast as well.
Absolutely. Keep doing it, people. Twitter mailbag. It's real.
Yeah. I think we wanted to look forward to where the Heat are in their standings right now, kind of look ahead to the schedule and how they compare to the team that they're chasing, which is the Boston Celtics at the 3 seed.
Both teams are 39-28. Did the Celtics just lose?
They own the tiebreaker.
Right. But Boston has a tiebreaker. So Boston's still in the 3rd seed. So the Heat just have to have a better record than the Celtics. That's the only way that they get this 3 seed.
In order to catch them. Right.
Right. So kind of looking at their schedules side by side here, it looks like the Heat have a little bit of an easier schedule down the stretch than Boston. I mean, they get Charlotte and Cleveland. There's two tough games coming up, right? Thursday, Saturday, Charlotte and Cleveland. I guess I could just go through the whole thing because there's not that many. At New Orleans, at San Antonio, which is, we can just chalk that up as a loss. If we win that, that's gravy. Orlando Magic, Brooklyn Nets, Lakers, Kings. You imagine that could be 4 straight wins. At Portland, that's going to be a tough one. The Pistons play them tough this season. That could be tough. Chicago is Chicago. They're still okay. Orlando twice in a row, then Detroit. And then the big one at the end of the year, which I'm kind of looking forward to, because it could end up being a really important game, at Boston.
Right.
Last game of the season for both.
So what's realistically at stake here? I mean, obviously seeding is one thing. You want home court advantage, so you're contending for the 3 or 4 spot, hopefully, at least.
I think the difference is, when do you play Cleveland?
Okay.
Right? If you're in the 3 spot, then you're playing Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, right? Let's assuming the Cavaliers get that far. And I've already talked about that I'm not in love with them. I don't know if that was on the podcast or before we were talking. I've lost track.
It was before.
All right. Well, then I just outed myself. Not a believer in Cleveland. But, you know, the Cavs are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. When do you want to play them? If you get that 4 seed, then and you win that first round, then you're playing them in the second round. So I think the 3 seed's really important. I like the way the Heat match up with the Raptors. I like the way the Heat match up with a lot of the teams. The Pacers have played them well all season, but that's
yeah. There's some risk involved, right? I mean, which yeah. of the teams that are currently stacked 5 through 8? You know, which one is the most dangerous as a potential matchup for Miami? The Hawks? I don't see it.
I don't see the Hawks. I don't want to play Charlotte.
I don't either.
I don't like the way they could draw Whiteside out to the 3 point, like out of the paint. I don't like it.
Right. And Indiana is streaky.
Yeah, and Indiana, like, I know LeBron's not there. Roy Hibbert's gone. Lance Stevenson's gone. But there's something between Eric Spoelstra and Frank Vogel, and between these two, and Larry Bird and Pat Riley. Like, there's those teams come out to play. Like, those guys get their teams ready to play each other. Like, right. You never know what's going to happen in the Heat-Pacers series. I still think that thing's real. That's a real rivalry.
And I think Monte Ellis has just enough DGAF in his system where he might just go there and be like, ah, you know what, I'm just going to get mine. And he could conceivably, you know, I know this is a different player than he was, you know, when he was talking smack back in the Milwaukee era, but, you know, he could conceivably catch fire against Miami and be a major factor there. You know, you never want Paul George to feel overly confident, although Justice Winslow has shown the ability to defend him fairly well.
Yeah, and I like Miles Turner as a mismatch at this point, especially if Bosch isn't playing. I don't know when Bosch is coming back. That's a whole wrench we can throw in this. But Ty Lawson, I mean, they have him now. There's going to be like a revenge factor for that guy. Like, who knows?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't want to play the Pacers. But at the same time, like, if you're picking between the Pacers and the Hornets or the Cavs, you're trying to position yourself to a position where you hold off the Cavaliers as long as possible.
So ideally, I think we're looking at Miami getting the third seed and Atlanta somehow dropping to the sixth seed so that we play them in the first round and conceivably move past them in five or six games at the most, I'd say.
Right.
That's the best case scenario. Yeah, and then hold off meeting Cleveland until the Eastern Conference Finals if you find a way to get past Toronto.
And I like Charlotte's chances of passing Atlanta. I think they're playing really well lately.
Yeah.
Atlanta's not playing poorly. Like, Atlanta's coming on too lately, but I like what the Hornets are doing. So, I mean, the Celtics have a tough schedule coming up. I mean, they just lost to the Pacers as we're recording this thing. Tomorrow night on the second game of back-to-back against Oklahoma City, then at Toronto. They have to play Toronto again later on. They have to play the Clippers. They have to play at Portland, just like the Heat do. They still have a Warriors game on the schedule. Milwaukee's still of it. Out there. I mean, their last four games of the season is Milwaukee, Atlanta, Charlotte, Miami.
Ooh. A lot of playoff implications there.
Yeah. I mean, they can end up just kind of tripping backwards into the playoffs if it just doesn't break right. I think the Celtics are a good team. Obviously, they're the third seed in the Eastern Conference. I'm a believer in the Celtics. I think that that's a good team from top to bottom. Brad Stevens is a heck of a coach. And they hang in games. But that's a tough last four-game stretch for anybody.
I mean, they've got the only clear outs for them are Philly,
yeah,
Phoenix, and the Lakers. I mean, the Pelicans, I guess, at this point, too.
Did you say Orlando?
Orlando's played them tough. I think Orlando actually beat them in Orlando earlier this season. I covered that game.
At home, though. I don't know.
At Boston.
But it's at the second game of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
And they could be looking ahead to Toronto later that week, too, that Wednesday. So, yeah, I mean. Yeah.
They've got it's a tough schedule coming up for them. Miami's got a much easier slate of games coming up. So I don't know. Do you want to do a prediction here? Do you want to just get first takey? No?
No, I don't. You can. I won't stop you from doing it. But I've been so bad at that. I don't want to
put myself out there.
Yeah, I know. Usually I'm open and I fall for it, but no, not this time.
Not tricking you.
At least let's look ahead to the next few games and see how they play out. Charlotte, a win?
I don't know. That Charlotte team scares me, man.
I do. I agree with you 100%. I just think that we catch them this Thursday at home, and you know, we're a few days off, and I think for the veterans, that's
a good point.
I think that's a good one.
Yeah, two nights off.
So. Would it be inconceivable to imagine Chris Bosh makes his comeback either then or Saturday night against Cleveland?
How much fun would that be?
That would be amazing.
If he's ready for Charlotte, you still hold off.
Right?
That's like, right? And see, the analytics, you and I love analytics, but that's old school, right? Like, you want that energy, you want that fire that comes with a Chris Bosh return on a Saturday night.
Hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James. And
yeah.
I mean, have they ever played Cleveland with their full roster intact? Like, hasn't either Bosh or Wade been out for most of the matchups against Cleveland ever since LeBron left?
Right, or LeBron, yeah. And then, so that's another interesting topic. I mean, let's say that this Heat thing is real, right? And Bosh comes back and the Heat's got something going and then they're able to get all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals and play the Cavs. We've never really seen those two teams play each other.
Right.
You know? Like, that's extremely interesting.
Oh, I think most people would want to see that. I'm sure of it. I think most people would want to see the storylines there, and the fact that both teams are capable. Look, Cleveland is very good defensively, but they're incredible when they're on fire offensively. They're unstoppable. I mean, not necessarily on a par with a Golden State or anything like that, but they're very good. And Miami can be so good defensively, and we've seen some flashes from them. And certainly Joe Johnson helps. And can you imagine the addition of Chris Bosh there? The way that spreads the floor. It's I don't want to tantalizing
look,
matchup.
I don't want to look ahead too much, but if that happens, I'm flying back to Miami, at least for a game. So
I'm hoping for credentials.
Yeah, there we go. Just cover the damn thing.
And even if I don't cover, I think I'm just going to like hide out in the arena somewhere and show up, like shower there somehow, sneak in, and wind up getting prime seats. You know,
you could pretend to be like Beno Udrih or something, or who was it? That, Tyler Johnson. Who was it that kept getting stopped?
I think it was Tyler, right?
Tyler Johnson, right? And people kept asking him who he was, and he's like, "I play for the damn team."
Well, he's so short, man. I mean, you wouldn't really look at him and see him as an NBA ballplayer.
You just walk in there and be like, "Look, I'm Tyler Johnson."
I'm taller than Tyler Johnson. Although I can't, limp. I can't dunk the same way he can.
And I don't think that's what they ask you. Oh, really? Prove it.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff as always, David. Thanks to all of our Twitter listeners and Twitter adders to our podcast. We really appreciate it for the mailbag. You could find the Heat Check. Oh, little announcement. We're migrating from SoundCloud to Blog Talk Radio completely. We were always available on both. You can find all of the past episodes still on SoundCloud if you wanted to like listen to those for whatever reason. Blog Talk Radio whatever and reason. Stitcher, still on Stitcher as well. I like Stitcher. I like Blog Talk Radio, so cool yeah. Little thing there. Completely part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Network over there. You can find this podcast, plenty of other great podcasts over there. As well. Thanks for listening as always. We'll catch you next time. What's your addiction, baby? Love can make the bitch go crazy. Kiss, hug, fuck, and then get faded. Fall out, and it's all out war. Head twirling, your vision blurring. Dope man in that kitchen stirring. So lift your burdens. Fuck is you so forgetful for? Girl, you know that you need that raw. Girl, you know that you need Vaseline. Green lace with that cocaine. Pop a pill, pop a send them jeans. To celebrate summer, we're offering a free pair of flip-flops when you spend £35 on clothing, shoes, accessories, or beauty at M&S. Free those toes and strut into the sunshine. But hurry, this offer ends 4th of July. Only M&S. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply, subject to availability. See selected stores and online for details. Support for this podcast comes from Dice.com, the career hub for tech. With their new salary predictor, Dice makes it easier for you to understand how much your skills are worth. They'll even show you which skills are most likely to increase your pay. And with over 70,000 tech jobs, you'll be able to put those skills to good use when you find your next role. Dice is always free for job seekers, so visit dice.com/canyouhackit to see how you can start hacking your career today.